Welcome to Your True North, a program that explores how values act as a compass, directing our lives and work. Inspiring guests tell how key events and influential figures shaped their values and how they've used those values to create a life rich in meaning, accomplishments, and personal satisfaction. Your True North is hosted by Cindy Camp. Are you seeking your true north? Then welcome.
Welcome to Your True North. Today I will be talking with Kasha Sainer and Emma Wansel, recent graduates of Aquinas College in Grand Rapids, Michigan, where they were involved with social justice issues, including interfaith initiatives. They will both be spending the coming year working with the Jesuit Volunteer Corps of the Catholic Church in different parts of the United States. Thank you for joining me here today, Kasha and Emma. You both just completed college, and you were very active on your campus. Yeah. Would you tell us about the issues and the school organizations that you were involved with?
Yeah, thank you so much for having us. I think this is a great program. Really excited to hear some of the other people interviewed as well. Emma and I both graduated from Aquinas College, as you mentioned. This year was a little bit of a perfect storm for us. I think we were involved through campus in a variety of ways, but also with some overlapping consensus. So we both work for campus ministry. We were both involved with Student Senate. And I think a lot of the concerns that we heard from our peers, our friend groups, and other students on campus kind of came in a three-part system and, of course, molded together. First, we talked quite a bit about the Black Lives Matter movement and racial justice. That's something, especially on a pretty homogeneous white campus, had some tension, obviously. White privilege was a conversation that we had, and we kind of formed a panel with one of our philosophy professors. Another one that I'd like to point out was the LGBT community and the concerns of the intersection of spirituality and sexuality, what that looks like, what inclusive community looks like in those identities, and of course with the national climate as well, the feminist movement and what it looks like for students to be participating in the Women's March, or what it looks like in relation with our Catholic identity to hold some of those values and really talk about them openly. So it was a...
Yeah, that is a perfect storm.
Yeah,
there's
a lot of big
things there. And Emma, what do you have anything you'd like to add to that?
I think you summed it up pretty well. I think the only thing that I would preface with is that we kind of all got involved into social justice through the interfaith movement. So we got into interfaith to kind of bridge these differences and maybe find a home for those of us who felt like they were on the fringes of our tradition. And then we ended up finding these social justice issues and being able to use the skills that we had in interfaith of kind of building that empathy and telling stories throughout the year.
Yeah, that's great. And I'm going to ask you, you mentioned the feminist movement. What specifically did you do in that area?
We had a group from Aquinas through the Social Action Committee, which I was a part of, go to the Women's March on Washington in January. So we talked about maybe bringing that back to Aquinas. And so what we ended up doing was, actually my roommate, Lindsay Bossigal, she planned an entire women's march on the Aquinas College campus. And we had three speakers kind of talking about what it means to be pro-woman. And we did have a little bit of controversy because the national march was considered pro-choice, and we were on a Catholic campus, and so people automatically assumed that we had the same platform. So we had some difficulty with that, but we actually ended up having a really great turnout, and I think a lot of people who thought that feminism and holding the Catholic identity were mutually exclusive ended up actually showing up and kind of learning a lot about how wide of kind of a road this is and how many identities you can hold. And we actually had a huge turnout from the Dominican Sisters at Marywood, which was awesome. And they did an impromptu Dominican blessing over the entire crowd, which
I
was
cried.
Great. Yeah, everybody
I cried.
Well, that sounds like a very interesting final year of college. And certainly the fact that you, I know as full-time students, I'm guessing that you probably both have some part-time work that you do, and then all of these extra activities speaks to a level of commitment. I wanted to ask you now, as you head out of Grand Rapids and you're going to work with the Jesuit Volunteer Corps, what has made you decide to do that? I know many of your counterparts would be looking for traditional paid employment. People have loans to pay. They want to start building up bank accounts. What made you decide to join the Jesuit Volunteer Corps?
Okay, so I'm joining the Northwest branch. So it's a little bit different than Kasha's. We're in like a different chunk of states. But if I'm completely honest, it was kind of a little selfishly motivated. I get to put off real life for another year, so that was nice. I actually have an AmeriCorps and Jesuit volunteer position, so I get kind of that loan forgiveness, and then I get to pick from any like Jesuit graduate schools I want to go to. But realistically, I think we had a friend, Elizabeth Sensing, who went, and I just kind of couldn't get it out of my brain. And she was kind of one of the people I'd always wanted to emulate at Aquinas. And she called people out, and she was saying, like, this isn't the way we want to act. This is how we want to act. And I want to do the same thing, but how can you do that if you're not actually, you know, living those values that you express? So for me, I mean, this is a great opportunity. I don't have really any, like, attachments or bills or anything to do. So, I mean, what greater year to do it?
Yeah. Right. I think I was inspired a lot by the call to social action, actually living out the questions that you're asking and really being in relationship with communities that are oftentimes unseen or unnoticed in our own space. I am going with the JVC National Branch, so I could have gone anywhere in the country. They're sending me to LA, Hollywood to be exact. Surprise!
I'll be in Montana, so.
We'll write letters. I think I was also pretty selfishly motivated for myself. I think talking about that perfect storm and being so involved in campus and being very busy and thin, a lot of my friends and professors would support me in admitting that I was very thinly stretched. I was kind of pulled in a lot of directions. And for me, this is a moment to really pause, to be in relationship with the people around me, to really try to see with really intentional and authentic eyes kind of the deepness of humanity and kind of relate to people in a way that's really just vulnerable and very real. So there's a call to simplicity in this lifestyle that I think Emma and I are both very attracted to. So we won't be on our phones 24/7. We don't have
Wi-Fi in our houses.
We don't have Wi-Fi in our houses. We're living off of a very modest budget. And I think that's something that I've definitely grown up taking some of those things for granted.
Oh, yeah. Easy.
And if we're going to call people on, you know, white privilege, or if we're going to call people on what it means to have heteronormative kind of culture surrounding you all the time, I think there are other aspects that you have to really call on yourself as well. And so definitely living a simple lifestyle and calling myself to witness the deep humanity around me is something I appreciate the opportunity to take that pause and to have that experience.
And as you know, of course, this show is focused on the topic of personal values and how you've identified those values. If there's a sort of an experience in life or just anything that you want to say about that.
I think the first kind of, at least one that has really stood out for me recently is this idea of the ethic of accompaniment, which is something that I've been working on living out, especially these past like 2 years, I would say. I was introduced to this like idea by Jen Bailey, who's a pastor in the AME church, and she brought in this idea of even if you aren't suffering any kind of marginalization or any kind of
otherness.
Yeah, yeah. I would say she kind of had this, and this is where I was introduced to this idea in Black Lives Matter, being I want to be a part of this, but I'm not affected by this. I don't get racially profiled. You know, I'm this white girl from the burbs, and I go to this beautiful liberal arts school, and you know, I hold a lot of privilege, but I want to be associated with that movement. And her kind of idea of this ethic of accompaniment is meaning you don't have to speak for people who are being marginalized. You don't have to really do anything else. But if you walk with those people and what that experience means when you're walking next to them, it really means a lot. And I didn't super understand how much that meant to me until actually right about a year ago, during the Pulse Massacre.
And the Pulse Massacre being the nightclub in Orlando.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
And I didn't understand how meaningful it is to have friends who know I hold that gay identity, and during that time of struggle to just come without asking and stand next to me and kind of walk and do kind of follow or what I was doing and support whatever was happening.
Values. I have to mimic Emma. I think the interfaith movement has really called me to allyship in a lot of ways. And there's a lot of troubling connotations of being an ally. And there are a lot of ways where it can go south or negative, for lack of better terms. And I think the ethic of accompaniment, as Emma mentioned, is really fully supported in playing and toying with this idea for about 2 years now. I've really come to also add authentic relationships. I mentioned that about JVC, but also integrity as a value, and knowing that having a relationship that backs up what you're saying and doing, and having kind of the foundation of standing firm. I think I struggled with the ethic of accompaniment, and that's where this comes from, is sometimes being too soft or being too easy on kind of hurtful or negative actions or words. And I would always say, oh, that person hasn't learned yet, or we don't know yet. And I think being able to stand up and to call out and really be firm in that integrity and really stand for those values is something that the ethic of accompaniment really calls out mm-hmm. in individuals.
Is there a certain situation and an example that you can think of that really illustrates for you how integrity became real or became this value that you live according to?
The example I can think of is from Student Senate in the first semester. So we had been, a bunch of colleges around the state had been, you know, there's a crazy amount of shootings that were caught on camera. And
on campus or just nationally?
No, just nationally.
All right.
So there was issues in Tulsa, Oklahoma is the one that I can think of specifically. Yeah. And there was schools all around us, U of M, Grand Valley. And we had a couple of friends at Grand Valley who kind of crafted this statement that said, like, we're going to stand with you. And it was literally the statement that was like, hey, this is the ethic of accompaniment. We're laying it out. We're standing with our students of color and Black Lives Matter. And we kind of wanted to do the same thing at Aquinas. And I remember being very difficult. I was difficult.
It was very hard on our friendship.
I was difficult because I said we need to make a statement like this. And I didn't want to have any compromises because I knew that this wasn't a time to water something down or to meet people where they're at. This was something that I was kind of like firm and maybe unapproachable.
Yeah. Being the buffer between students saying, I don't understand why Black Lives Matter is even a movement, to having Emma saying, no, this is something you cannot water down. You know, if you don't understand why this is a movement, this isn't a conversation we can have. This is a necessity. And having Emma really see the need for the survival of the movement was really tough on me. I think there were some, being a student leader or being in positions of student leadership, I think put a lot of tough frameworks, kind of put me in a box and really called me to force integrity out of myself and
so
really
it made
define
you speak
that.
Out
oh, and, for sure.
Yeah. And how did it eventually, what was the resolution? Did you put forward the statement that Grand Valley students, which is another university here in Grand Rapids, did you share their statement? Did you change it?
We did end up changing it, but we didn't get the votes to pass it the way we wanted to. But that didn't kind of inspire us of, if people don't understand why this conversation needs to happen, like, because the reasoning was this isn't affecting students on our campus. And I was like, this is a very real thing affecting our campus. So it kind of gave us an open door to create these conversations and call out our leaders and say, hey, if you think that this isn't necessary, come here and listen mm-hmm. and hear why it's necessary. So that kind of ended up being our project for the fall semester. I would say we ended up having that panel on white privilege and why we are allowed to be so blind to kind of issues of race.
Say a little bit more about that, if you would. Just illustrate something that you have learned, like, wow, this is something I'm entitled to that somebody else can't assume.
Oh, gosh, so many things. I think for me, I told you before I got here that I'm a faster driver than Kasia, and I've gotten pulled over like 3 or 4 times in my entire life, and I think this is something I didn't realize until this summer, was when I got pulled over most recently last summer, I had no doubt that I was going to leave that interaction healthy, well, probably joke around with the officer. It was fine. I ended up not getting a ticket. I was going 45 and a 25. There's no reason for that to happen.
Gosh.
And then to learn... like what my cousins, who are young Black men of color, what their moms have to tell them about being pulled over by a police officer, and whether people think that's warranted or not, that's very real. And then there's things as small as, I didn't realize that my hair product is so easily found in the grocery store. So things like that, I mm-hmm. think, were things that I kind of stepped back and I was like, whoa, this is something that I never paid attention to.
Yeah, I was just at work. Actually, a really recent example. I was at work 2 days ago, and I have a coworker, and he explained his name to someone, and the server or the customer said, "Oh, that's not your real name," and he was like, "But it is," and she was like, "Oh, you're playing a joke on me," and my name is a little bit unique. Kasha's unique, and people don't tell me that's not my real name when they're in front of me. So I think that microaggression really caught me off guard, especially for, you know, people I care about or people I see every day. Mm-hmm. I'm like, why would you call that out? And it's such a simple, and it's a 3-second thing, and it's just so hurtful yeah. and so painful. And I could see him shut down for a few moments and having to witness that and having and being someone that caused that reaction and not knowing or not caring that it was because it was small, being able to brush it off because it was small, that's not.
Well, let me follow up to the discussion about values and ask you both about your upbringing. I'm always curious. Mm. I know for some people, their values are very much tied into a religious background or an adult religious identification. For other people, no, not at all. And I'm curious for both of you if religion was part of your background and if it has in some way affected your sense of your values.
Yeah, I was definitely raised in a religious household, I would say. My parents were... They're what people would call cafeteria Catholics. So they go to mass, but they don't necessarily pick up or advocate for all of the things that may be controversial. So I remember my mom telling me I was never going to send my kid to a Catholic school. And here I am, graduated with 17 years of Catholic education, going into Jesuit Volunteer Corps, probably going to go to a Catholic graduate school. So I didn't, it was something that I didn't notice that my parents drew on so much for kind of things that they did outside of mass or the church. So I kind of just always assumed that it was just like their personality. But as I've gotten older, I think I've noticed that they really do take a strong inspiration from like the social justice, like tradition in the Catholic Church, and kind of hearing all like the old priests that they've been associated for who are all these rabble rousers is really awesome to hear. And I mean, my parents, when we went out west to visit Yellowstone National Park, my parents made sure that we visited Wounded Knee when I was 11. And so like for them, kind of exposing this injustice was a really big deal for them since I was a little kid. And so for me, I think that that's played a huge impact in how my values have formed. I didn't always necessarily identify with the Catholic part, but I kind of realized that for them, it's not separated. Like that was a huge part of their life. So,
yeah, that's always been a really interesting topic of conversation for Emma and I think, because mine's exactly the opposite. My family would say I grew up Catholic.
Catholic in name only.
Yeah, very secular Catholic. I think I've been to Christmas Mass maybe 3 times, Easter once or twice, but that's a long one.
Yeah.
So I want to say, I know that my mother was raised in a very Catholic household. My grandfather was Grand Knight and Knights of Columbus and all of these things in Metro Detroit. But when my mom moved up to Traverse City, I think she was feeling, for a variety of reasons, maybe unaccepted by the Catholic Church or just couldn't find that community again in Traverse City. So I was raised very secular. I think my values then come from probably the need to find my own community. I did not necessarily love my school growing up. It was beautiful and very lucky. Traverse City's gorgeous. But I don't think that I found a very tight-knit community in that space. And the value of just having to witness one another and be with one another when it's painful, even. I come from a very small family, so it's just my mom and my grandma and I, so a single mother. So for a lot of my life, it was the two of us. And so the need to rely on others and kind of reach out and call in is just a very natural kind of movement for me. For my mother, it was probably religious-based, just kind of from her foundation. But for me, it was never articulated as religious motivation.
And then I wanted to ask as well, if there's any areas where you've struggled with your values or where you feel that you didn't fully live up to a value that, you know, you'd like to think, hey, I believe in this, I live by this, and yet we're all human. Sometimes it's hard.
Yeah, this is really tough. We mentioned earlier, you know, Emma mentioned that time in Senate and the Black Lives Matter movement for me. I think in a vague sense, really learning that silence is often taking the side of the oppressor. There's so many beautiful quotes about that.
Nice, Martin Luther King.
Yeah.
Okay.
Bringing it. that was hard for me. I thought, you know, if I stay silent, for a lot of the perfect storm issues we had this year, even I had to really call myself to be vocal and to bring that ethic of accompaniment and to bring the willingness of relationships and bring past knowledge of relationships into these conversations, because I thought, if I'm silent, I won't make anyone mad, I won't make enemies, and eventually we'll all just hold hands in a while when it blows over. Learning this year that that's not how this works was a very painful struggle for me. I had to look at people, good friends, and say, I can't listen to you right now, or I'm going to challenge you on that. And learning how to call people out is tough. And it's scary, and you have to be so vulnerable and strong at the same time. Like, that's hard. And so in this perfect storm year with all three of those concerns I mentioned earlier, I struggled. But I feel like I came out on the other end a little bit stronger. Mm-hmm. So
For me, I think I struggled with kind of the values of the Catholic Church just because I, as I've said, like, I'm gay, and being able to, like, I love so many of the values that the church espouses, but, like, there's this one, I mean, let's be honest, there's more than one, but, like, there's one that, like, is very personal to me that I just can't accept. Like, I want to get married, I want to have a family, and for me, I just wanted to throw all, everything else out the window, and especially, like, I was, like, that angsty teenager, and, you know, I had everything wrong with the church, and I knew all the answers and all of that. So I kind of didn't care, and I wasn't interested in any kind of social justice work because I did associate that with the Catholic Church or any kind of, like, faith tradition or community, and I kind of, like, made fun of it. I mean, for me, I was like, look at them. They need to, like, go to Mass and get that piece of bread at the end, and that's dumb. So I think for me, that idea of having to throw everything out because, yeah, it's an ugly institution, and it's run by human beings, and so kind of to be able to, like, separate the institution from like the vertical hierarchy from, like, the horizontal community, for me, I think that was something that really challenged me and is something that I'm trying to, that's something I'm always working on, is kind of being able to still identify with those values that I was raised with.
Yeah.
I guess I'd also be curious what you're most proud of. And it sounds like there's a lot of things you've worked through, especially in the last year, but you've just come through four intense years of college. You're about to embark on, you know, career, although you're taking a non-traditional path. At this stage of your life, what would each of you say you're most proud of?
For me, it'd probably be the AQ Loves movement at Aquinas. That was something, we were really focused on racial justice, and then kind of, like, out of nowhere, we kind of ended up, it felt like backsliding into the issue of LGBTQ rights on a Catholic campus. And it was...
Can I just stop you? So AQ being Aquinas.
Yes.
So Aquinas Loves.
Yes.
Okay, just so our audience understands.
Yes.
Yeah.
So I'm sorry.
Yeah, so that was our hashtag was AQ Loves. Aquinas is called AQ because apparently it's too many syllables to say Aquinas. So that was something that second semester ended up kind of being my main focus, and kind of bringing the fact that there are so many people at Aquinas who identify within the LGBTQ community that we didn't know about. So even people who I had sat in class with, I had no idea that they identified as part of this community. Faculty and staff members who literally came out and supported us and said, I'm going to stand behind you, and there's that ethic of accompanying you again, and say, I'm going to just amplify your voice because you guys need to be heard right now. Yeah. And so we ended up kind of being able to tell a bunch of stories of students on campus who had such a hard time with this intersection of faith and sexuality that we throw around all the time, that people just assume that it's just one of these things we can just pull out of our pocket and toss out on the table. But it's such a painful intersection for so many people. And I mean, I consider it painful, but I mean, I know I've gotten off lucky. My parents have been absolutely amazing with coming out and kind of reconciling that faith and sexuality, those two components. But gosh, we just got to tell those stories and kind of come together in a way that I don't think I've seen in my entire 4 years at Aquinas. And just to kind of be in the middle of it was just like, it was amazing. And it was crazy because we were also students that were kind of going head to head with administration.
Yeah.
But like to see the community, like I had to try and not happy cry like all the time because it was just so amazing. And just the tide and the feelings, it was amazing. And that is something that I am most proud of for sure.
Yeah, I want to echo that. I think Emma's work, along with a group of students who were really kind of tightly knit with her and supported that, was gorgeous. I think a lot of us happy cried a lot in those last couple of weeks. One thing I would mention, mine goes back a little bit farther. And again, it's not just me. There's quite a few students who have kind of taken this and run with it. But bringing the interfaith movement to a private Catholic college was tough for us.
Yeah.
We were really lucky. So President Juan Olivares, who just retired this May, brought in Eboo Patel, the founder and CEO of the Interfaith Youth Corps, to Aquinas College to speak. And once I heard that, I thought, okay, cool. So Aquinas is thinking about this cool friendship thing with the community. And I went to the Interfaith Leadership Institute in Chicago that August, so about 2 years ago now. And within about 15 minutes, I think that just opened my eyes to how big this world is. Aquinas is beautiful. It's the 100-acre woods in East Grand Rapids. And our community can come together on some pretty tough issues, as Emma mentioned, but there's so much more. And so I think really bringing that to campus for me looked like learning the framework of the Interfaith Youth Core, really utilizing our community partners, calling on the Kauffman Interfaith Institute and Katie Gordon, and students from other campuses as well. So it became slowly an interfaith, intergenerational, and intercollegiate movement. So we really just...
Which I think is the first intercollegiate movement in the country.
As far as we're concerned. As far as we know, yeah. Yeah, which is awesome. So it's Aquinas College, Hope College, Calvin College, and Grand Valley State University each has a student intern, which is a position I served this year. And the four of us get together and we run programming based on voicing our values, engaging across lines of difference, and acting for the common good. So,
and that initiative is called, did it have a name?
Interfaith Engagement.
Okay. It's Better Together, too.
Yeah, it's Better Together through the Interfaith Youth Corps. So they have quite a few college alliances, partnerships across the country. Yeah. But I think founding that here at Aquinas College with a handful of pretty private and bubbled college communities was really... Yeah. Something I'm very, very
and like
proud
I said
of.
At the beginning, this everything that we have done in terms of like social justice has stemmed from interfaith. So being able to every event that we've thrown this year, every panel, like everything, we get to look out into the crowd and see our friends from Grand Valley, from Calvin, from Hope, and they bring their friends, and we get to show up for them, and to kind of be able to have that community is just like we're so lucky.
We're so so that's, lucky.
That's, yeah. So very interesting, and I'm thinking here in Grand Rapids. So of course we have Catholic and Protestant within the Christian world.
Sure.
Did you have involvement from Muslims, from Hindus? What other communities? Jewish students?
Yeah. I mean, on our campuses, this is a really interesting question. So on our campuses, each one is pretty homogenous. Mm-hmm. So we are, I would say it's a lot of spectrum. So for our Christian communities, ours specifically, it's atheist, agnostic, maybe grew up Christian, not anymore, and then Catholic. And of course, the wide variety of Catholics out there, right? So I think the intercollegiate movement really allowed us the opportunity to reach out to some other students with other intersecting identities. And of course, we talk about gender, sexuality, race, socioeconomic status, and those concerns as well. Really, we learned this year come into play, which is that perfect storm we're getting at here. But we did have a lot of involvement from our Sikh community.
Yes.
Amazing. Rishi is a phenomenal speaker in the area. Yep. We worked with the Islamic Cultural Center. We've partnered with Temple Emmanuel as well for a site visit in the past 2 years.
And Fred Stella at the Hindu Temple.
Perfect. Mm-hmm. We also partner with local Grand Rapids nonprofit organizations. So we've partnered with Rays of Hope International. We've partnered with the Blandford Nature Center and things like that. So we're really grabbing as many community organizations as possible and really giving students the opportunity to go on site visits and explore kind of the broader area, which has been really impactful for a lot of our students.
Yeah, I think, like you said, like just because this is it's West Michigan, it's pretty homogenous,
it's
but
pretty
we do,
Christian.
I mean, it's pretty Christian, but we do have like the chance to go out into the community and make this an intergenerational movement as well. So like Rishi Makar, he's a dad, he's a father, I don't know how old he is, he's older than us, but kind of to be able to talk about interfaith with him and his family and what it's like being a father right now in the Trump presidency and what it's like when your kid gets bullied because he's a brown little kid.
And racial profiling, too. He talks a lot about Islamophobia and the attack and the rethoric on Muslims. And this community is not necessarily Muslim. So
wear the turbans, so they end up getting
racially
profiled.
And what does that look like for him in how to raise a family? Another intergenerational movement we have right now is the with the Dominican Sisters, which has been so beautiful for a lot of us. They are just figures of leadership and just female empowerment, and I could talk about them forever.
Sisters have been at the forefront of social justice issues for a long time in this country,
haven't
they? It
took us too long to find them, though.
Yeah, you'd think for going to Aquinas, we'd all be best friends by now, but their resilience is something we very much so appreciate and admire.
So, and I'm struck by your use of the term perfect storm a number of times in our discussion, and I know you've said there has been, of course, some resistance to some of these initiatives and efforts. As you leave Aquinas, and you mentioned other schools here in the Grand Rapids area, are you feeling more support? Is there still a lot of resistance on the part of the administration? Right. I'm just kind of curious kind of where you think things are at this point in time.
I mean, there's always going to be resistance, right?
Yeah.
I think, honestly, though, I think we are leaving with a bigger support base than we could have ever imagined. And the reality is that the members of administration who we had kind of been fighting it's a small number, like, to be honest. Like, I would say that there's definitely more members at Aquinas who were kind of supporting us than those who weren't.
I think part of this, the success or kind of the joy that we speak of now, even though it was a really painful time for us, is because when these conversations started, when the hurtful and painful national rhetoric of the Trump presidency became vocal and so widespread, I don't think students knew who our allies were on issues that were controversial or on issues that are taboo, right? You don't talk about religion, politics, sexuality.
And we were like, hi, my name's Emma Wanzel. I want to ask you about politics, sexuality, and religion. So, first thing.
I mean, those are taboo topics. You don't talk about those in private Catholic colleges on a wide, larger scale. And so using, you know, the bridge of voicing our values and engaging in small groups really showed us who in our community is not necessarily safe, but who's willing to meet us on those unspoken conversations. And I think that really brought us a lot of success and support.
And even if they weren't, I mean, I've had several members of administration say or send me emails and say, thank you. We've never had this conversation before or thought we needed to have this conversation before.
Yeah.
And I mean, that's where it starts. I mean, obviously I'd like to see everything moving faster than it is, but having members of administration say like, we've never talked about this before, is I would say that's a success.
Yeah, basically, we just made noise.
Yeah.
And we found a lot of gratitude and appreciation. And I'm endlessly grateful for the people who allowed the space for the noise to be made. I think there's a lot of faculty that did some work behind the closed doors that we probably still don't know about. And I will forever be grateful for them and their mentorship.
Well, it sounds like you're leaving your school and our community in a better place. And so exciting to talk to the two of you with all of your enthusiasm and your openness to life and to people. I want to thank you both very much for being here with me today, Emma Wanzel and Kasia Sainer. And I wish you the very best as you head out to Montana and Los Angeles. Thank you to our audience for listening to Your True North. Please join us again for another episode or listen to our podcasts at yourtruenorthpodcasts.com. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at YTN Podcasts.
You've been listening to Your True North with Cindy Camp. The opinions expressed on today's episode are not necessarily those of WXAV 88.3 FM, St. Xavier University, or the producers of Your True North. For a copy of today's program, you can download it as a podcast by visiting yourtruenorthpodcasts.com. Thank you very much for listening to Your True North.